You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Good evening.
I hope you've both had a fantastic week.
It's been a week.
It has indeed. We are back with a brand new episode. We've got some Lord of the Rings or Middle Earth,
yeah.
On this podcast. We're going to be taking a look into the match play guide, which came out last week.
Yeah, it's a small but mighty tome.
It is indeed. So that's going to form our big feature of this week. I say that's going to be the big feature this week. We've got a lot of news, haven't we?
We have a lot of news. There's been a bonanza of news over the last few days, and some cool FAQs dropped, which we'll probably have a look at later as well.
Yeah, for the Disciples of Tzeentch and the Caradhron Overlords. We've also had a very busy top three. This week we were looking for your top three battle boxes or box games.
Yeah, anything that comes in a big box.
A big box. You guys haven't let us down. You've sent in some awesome choices. We'll discuss ours first later on, and then we'll read out yours towards the end of the podcast. Before we delve into the delights of all that, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby for the past 7 days. I'll start for a change. I finished building the contents of E4 War.
Nice.
So they're all done. I've just handed them over to Matt.
Yes, I've noticed the delivery of Caradhrons ready for spraying.
For undercoating with the fang. And I'm really looking forward to painting them this week.
Make sure you don't put potatoes down the rifles.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. If I start rolling like ones when I'm playing against him, I know what's happened. I've also been painting. I completely forget to put these on Twitter, but I've been painting my Arkanaut company as well.
Have you? Well
as the little guys for the frigate and the ironclad.
The crew,
which Matt very kindly undercoated last week. I'm hoping to have them done this weekend.
Awesome.
Before Matt delivers the remainder of my force.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to get a game on then.
I can't wait. I'm like chomping at the bit to take these out for a spin.
Maybe we should do post FAQ Caradhrons versus post FAQ Tzeentch.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be really cool. And that's about it, really, I think. Not much else has been going on for me in the hobby. Jay, how about yourself?
So this is the Specialist Games month, February. So I've just been working on some Specialist Games sort of stuff. Not Specialist Game, but not mainstream Age of Sigmar or 40k.
Some of the sideline stuff.
That's it, yeah. So I've been painting up Ripper's Snarlfangs for Warhammer Underworld's Beastgrave.
They look really cool as well.
Yeah, they're really nice, fun models to paint. I wish they'd do a goblin army on wolves, you know, bring them all back. I had a look on the army builder. You can still get the wolf
riders.
Get boss in chariot.
Yeah.
I think it was the old goblin that swallowed the troll.
Grom the Paunch.
Grom the Paunch, that's him, yeah. But the old wolf riders have gone. But the Ripper Snarlfang models are so cool.
And it'd be cool to see a more kind of like tribal goblin faction based on them.
Yeah.
I was thinking we haven't had a chance to play any full games of Warhammer this week, but we did actually have a four-player game of Warhammer Underworlds for the first time in some time the other day. That was really good. Forgot how much that game is awesome.
I know. Well, we've got another game tomorrow.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Try and get that to the table as often as possible, I think, because it's one of those games where you forget how much fun it is.
Yeah. And, we're playing a four-player game, which is a bit more complex. So just a standard game's like half an hour long. It's a nice, quick game.
Yeah.
Really quick.
On top of that, I've just been sorting out my Blood Bowl team. So I haven't actually put any paint on any Blood Bowl people, but I've been sort of organising them and trying to decide which team, because we're entering a league with Purpose Walk the Unicorns.
We are, yeah.
So a little Blood Bowl league. I don't know which team to take. My favourite team is the Wood Elves. Could go to the Wood Elves. But I'm thinking I might go Pro Elves instead.
The Elf Union,
yeah. I'm feeling quite Elfy at the moment.
Elfy. I wonder why. Matt, what have you been up to this week?
Well, most of this week has been taken up with a single model. I mean, it's a really cool model, but it's taken a lot of time. And that is the Triumph of St. Catherine, which is finally finished.
It looks so nice.
Really cool.
It's, I mean, this is the mod that kind of sold me on the new Sisters of Battle range.
Yeah.
So, no messing around. This was my tester model for the army. It went through a few iterations, which is why it took a little bit longer. Originally, they were going to have red upper cloaks and then black lower cloaks. Mm-hmm. But I thought that looked too similar to the Martyred Lady scheme.
Yeah.
So, to make the... I think... I'm doing Argent Shrouds. I think the silver works well with the red. Mm-hmm. And the full red robes has got a very Spanish Inquisition vibe.
Definitely.
For, you know, a bunch of fanatics that are probably going to set you on fire, I thought that was suitably fitting.
Oh, it's so cool.
Really cool.
All the cherubs as well. Ace. Very, very cool. Can't wait to see it on the battlefield as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that. I've got a lot of infantry to paint as well before the Throne of Skulls doubles, which I've bought tickets to this weekend as well.
Mm.
So yeah, I'll probably bring these along because they're ace. I've also started on Legio Ignatum. I say started on, revisited Legio Ignatum for Adeptus Titanicus. Because as we'll see later in the show, there's lots of awesome Titanicus stuff coming out.
Which has revitalised Matt's interest.
Yeah, well, I'd started painting a Titan, and I was like, I'm getting an airbrush at some point, so I'm going to wait until I get that. Because stuff like that with panels, it's a lot easier to get all... You could do it with spray cans, I suppose, but they've discontinued the red and the yellow, so that was unlucky.
Yeah.
Same problem you've had with the Fang, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, getting those base colours down, and then you can start working on the detail and bringing them up. So, they're pretty much all kind of primed with the base colours now. Yeah, probably start working on those tonight, doing some of the gold trim and putting some washes in. Because Titanicus is a really, really good game.
It is a cool game. I got quite a bit of that painted at the beginning of last year. I might add a few Titans myself, and then I can view a game.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds good. And we're going to get Dave on the Titanicus phone.
Played it. Never. I need to watch you guys have a game. I think that would be the best way for me to get into it.
Yeah.
See it in action. Cool.
And yeah, then I painted some walls. Unfortunately, not Zone Mortalis walls. I was painting the bedroom. So that et into some of my hobby time, unfortunately, this weekend.
Using the artificer brush.
It took a while. So yeah, so going into the rest of the month... I want to try and get some, like Jay said earlier, some different kind of specialist-y stuff painted. There's some Lord of the Rings that I want to get some paint on. I want to finish my Necromunda gang, because I want to play some Necromunda this month. Also, Blood Bowl, I'm doing Goblins for the Purple Sparklies. Blood Bowl League, their purpose is going to be kill as many players on the opposing team, and if they're really lucky, they might even score a goal at some point.
I think for me this month is, I know it's supposed to be sort of specialist game, but I really want to paint my overlords.
Yeah.
So they're my priority. However, like you guys, I'd like to do a Blood Bowl team. Because we've revitalised in Underworld as well, I'm quite lucky that I've got my Evocators already, and I quite like that warband.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with those guys and try and get a really good deck for them. They're going to be my priority for Underworlds.
Awesome.
So luckily they're already painted. But yeah, hopefully a good few weeks of painting ahead.
Excellent.
Right, I think we should take a little pause because we're going to need a deep breath for what's about to come, and that is this week's news. Matt, you've got a book full of news there, I can see.
Yeah, we've got a lot of news this week and lots of cool pre-orders. So, without further ado, let's jump into those right now. So, on Saturday, on pre-order, we have got Psychic Awakening 5, The Greater Good.
The Greater Good.
The Greater God.
So, yeah, exactly. This is £25 and it features the Tau, the Astra Militarum, and the Gene Stealer Cults.
Hey.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good book for Dave.
Yes, it is. I mean, I have put the Gene Stealer Cults on back burner for now, but oh man, that Shadow Sun model. I can't believe it's only a week away.
Well, if you're a fan of Shadow Sun, and you're a fan of the 8, if you order your copy from Games Workshop, you get data sheets for all the above.
That's cool. It's a shame that that's the only data sheet you're going to have.
Oh, the data cards. The data sheets are in the book itself.
The data
cards. But the cards are exclusive.
Yeah, it's a shame that all the rest of the army don't have data cards.
Yeah, at least in the 8, that is your army, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but none of the other armies have data cards.
Not yet,
no.
Imperial Knights do.
Yeah, but I mean, you got like 2 models in our army.
So yes, that's exciting. Alongside this, we've got the gorgeous new Shadow Sun model. £27.50, which is... going rate, I suppose.
Yeah,
a little bit on the pricey side, but yeah, she looks really
a battle suit
cool.
And 2 drones.
Yeah,
and is it 3 heads?
Free heads.
Multiple weapons.
Multiple weapon options.
You can even, I was reading on Warhammer Community this week, you can give a one of each gun if you're not sure which one to go for. I think, optimally, you'd want to give a two of the same weapon.
Shadow Sun translates in the Tower language as Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades, yeah.
So yeah, she looks amazing. I'm sure you're going to add this to the army.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Cool. If you're a fan of potentially compromised humanoids, you probably want to get start collecting Gene Stealer Cults. This is £60 and has 10 Neophytes, 5 Acolytes, an Icon Ward and a Ridge Runner. So if you bought all those stuff separately, it'd cost you £97.50, so you save about £37 with this box.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. The only thing that you might, you know, multiple boxes is good. The Icon Ward, you probably don't need two of them, but I'm sure you can whack it on eBay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's almost identical to the one they actually previewed-ish in the Codex, but they swapped out the Goliath with the Ridge Runner.
Which is a shame, because I think it'd be even better value with a Goliath.
Yeah, because you could get away with buying multiple start collecting boxes because you'd have a tank that you probably want a few of and all those foot... Whereas the Ridge Runner is a cool little tank. Or it's not really a tank, is it? Like a mobile
vehicle. Yeah.
And would you want tons of them in your army? But it's still great value.
Potentially on your cult, you know, they are quick little platforms that you can stick a mining laser on. So
you remind me of those little... Early Learning Centre red and yellow cars. They're just so small.
They're probably a better pick than a Sentinel because they're quicker.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They look smart.
And they look smart. And that's what it's all about. Alongside this, we have got the Kellamorph, originally seen in Stern's Disciples. This is pretty good value at £17.50.
He's a brilliant character as well.
Which one's this?
This is the Gunslinger.
Oh, the Gunslinger. Oh, Ace, yeah. That is an Ace model.
And he's really good in-game as well.
He's awesome in-game. I've seen many a battle report where they just drop him and he just kills a character.
Yeah.
Ace.
Yeah, so I was on the fence about selling my Gene Stealer Cult because I haven't used them. But I've got a lot of sprues that are unbuilt. And with the Kellamorph out and start collecting box, it's suddenly become a lot easier to build a Gene Stealer Cult army. Because I think that was one of the reasons you drifted from them.
Because, they were an expensive army to collect with no start collecting box. So, yeah, now they're a bit more of a tasty army to get on the battlefield. Maybe for the later part of 2020 for me.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, look forward to playing yours if you get reinvigorated.
Yeah, well, on a tangent to that, another game that was potentially expensive to get into, but suddenly has become a lot easier to get your teeth into. That was quite well done there.
Yeah, it was.
Adeptus Titanicus. Previously you had the choice of a £35 rules pack and then buying all the Titans separately, or the Grandmaster Edition, which currently retails at £180. Games Workshop have done an absolute bargain with this upcoming Adeptus Titanicus starter box. You get the full rules, you get terminals for all your Titans, you get a full set of cards, tokens, plastic range markers. You get 2 Reaver Titans with both different weapon sprues. You get 2 Warhound Titans with all the available weapons. You get 2 Cerastis Knights. All that had cost you £165 separately. This is £90. If you get it from a third-party store, such as Element Games, you can get it for £72.
That is good.
Mental.
You know, for comparison, just the 2 Reavers alone had cost you £70 to buy.
Wow.
So, and the rule book in here is fully updated with all the errata, which is unusual to see, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that is really good.
Now, I did have a spy on the Games Workshop website. The individual boxed rules are no longer available. So I think this is the equivalent of your Dark Imperium box now. This is your way into the game.
Mm-hmm.
You could easily split it with a friend and have a few Titans each. In another brilliant move, none of the contents overlap with the Grandmaster Edition. So if you've already got that, you can get this and have pretty not much the options for loads of different maniples.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Which is really, really cool. So yeah, that's a bargain. I'm tempted to get one just for... I was tempted to get another Reaver and a Warhound. And if I'm going to do that, I might as well buy this and get a few free ones.
Yeah.
Plus the updated rules.
Yeah, well, I need some more Reavers because the Legio Graphonicus, they take the Reavers in place of other Titans in their maniples. So it was a Reaver-heavy Legion, that was.
And let's not forget those Knights that come in that box are the coolest-looking Knights as well.
Well, second to the Knight Befarian, I'd say.
These the Cerastus of the Lance. Yeah, I'm with Dave.
So yeah, but that's not all the Titanicus love. We have got the Warbringer Titan. Now, you think we mentioned this on the show last week?
Yeah.
That is a Titan that I wanted to see in Adeptus Titanicus. Yeah. Well, we've got it in Adeptus Titanicus. It is £55, which is a little bit pricey. I suppose it is somewhere between the Reaver and the Warlord. I think it's on a similar chassis to the Reaver, but it's got a massive
how much is the back. How much is the Warlord?
The Warlord is £65 and the Reaver's £35 for the Reaver.
Right.
So I was hoping about the £45 range. £55 is a bit more, but again, from a third party store, you can get it a lot cheaper than that.
Yeah, and I guess you don't need to buy any extra weapon packs for this model either.
No, it does take the Reaver weapon arms.
Right, okay.
But I mean, the main thing is the massive siege cannon on the back of it. And I haven't seen the maniples yet, but I can't imagine you having multiple of these in an army. It's probably one sat at the back, bombarding things from a distance.
Yeah.
Which I play Krieg, you know. I'm all about a massive siege titan, so this will be going on the shopping list. Something that might account for the slight increase in price is that the terminal is included in the box.
Okay, yeah.
That makes sense.
It's not a heavy cardstock one like the ones that you can buy separately. I think it's just standard card material.
Okay.
But it's good to have. Essentially, that's all your rules for the vehicle in the box, because it stops them from being discontinued down the line. It's just a much better way of doing it. Going forward, all Titans will come with a terminal, making it a lot easier to get into the game.
Cool.
So, that's it though. We've got more stuff coming out on top of this. We've got the Manufacturum Imperialis for £30. This is a collection of battlefield scenery that can also double as basing material for your Titans.
Mm.
And, by some kind of crazy coincidence, is also the same scale as Aeronautica, if you wanted to use it to base those miniatures.
It's really almost cool.
As if at some point in the future, all these different tiny games might blend together into something resembling Epic. Yeah. Who knows?
I saw one of the Games Workshop stores somewhere, I can't recall which one it is. They've built a Titanicus battlefield with the scenery, not this new stuff that's out for it, but then raised above that, they've got a plastic Perspex sheet
for Aeronautica,
which they play Aeronautica on. That's so really you have cool. your Titans underneath in Aeronautica.
That's really cool. This is an Acer. It's £30. It contains silos, crates, barrels, cranes, all sorts of stuff. And they look really nice.
Yeah, they do.
And I think that's relatively cheap at £30 as well. They could have easily done this as resin sets for, you know, that for one piece.
Mm.
It shows that there's been a lot of love for Titanicus with these plastic
investments
sets
in the system.
Kind of with all this, we've got a new source book, Shadow in Iron. So this tells the tale of the betrayal at Kalth, where the Ultramarines got spanked by the Word Bearers.
Well, it didn't sort of play out like that. They did initially.
Yeah, I think Gulliman kind of won that fight, really, didn't he?
Yeah, he rallied them once the element of surprise had disappeared. Anyway.
So yeah, and then this also tells the tale of the retaliationary strike by various Titan Legions as well. Now, we don't know all the Titan Legions that are featured in the book. However, there are transfers coming out at the same time for Metallica, Astorum and Ignatum.
Oh, isn't that handy, Matt?
That is handy. So presumably those Legions are in the book because they're ones that we've been waiting for a while. Legio Ignatum, I know, were deployed on Terra, so I'd kind of consign myself to waiting for that book to come out eventually when we get to the siege. But yeah, hopefully they're in there. So
out of interest, asking for a friend, can you still get the transfers for the old Legions?
Most of them are available on the Games Workshop website if you wanted to do a Titan Legion, Dave. One really cool thing that you know about Shadow and Iron is that it features Ordo Sinister.
Ooh.
Now, these are a super specialist Titan Legion that kind of fall outside the normal Legios. These report directly to the Emperor himself.
Mm.
And they're only deployed in the most dire of circumstances. I mean, I suppose the general of all your armies turning traitor is a fairly dire scenario.
Yeah.
These guys specialise in psychic Titans with psychic weapons and psychic shenanigans.
Psychic.
Now, if only there was a model to represent these. Well, on Friday, the Warlord Sinister is being released from Forge World. It is a combi kit, so it has got the plastic frames for the Warlord plus resin upgrade parts to upgrade it to the Sinister Psy Titan. Don't know how much it is. I'm going to guess about £100 for, if you think, a £65 plastic kit plus an upgrade frame.
Mm.
Yeah, probably close to that. I think they sell the bundled Warlord with alternate weapon arms for, I think it's £95, so I'm guessing a similar kind of price, but it does look really pretty.
Yeah.
They've done an awesome kind of colour scheme on it as well, nice, like glowing runes, yeah, and stuff. There's also going to be a new terminal pack, which contains terminals for the Warlord, the Warbringer, the Reaver, and two Warhounds. For maybe people who have come in with this edition and need some more terminals for the Titans, or want to replace the standard card ones that are going to come boxed with them, with the chunky, thick ones, because they are really nice terminals, aren't they?
Yeah.
With some embossing and stuff on them. Yeah, so that is a lot of Adeptus Titanicus stuff coming out, and it's a bit of a surprise to see this much stuff come out in one go.
In one go, it definitely is, yeah.
If anything, this is more like it's not a second edition of the game, but it feels like it. Kind of a big relaunch.
It does, and it also I think this sort of rounds out the range. I don't think there's much more now they need to add to the Imperial.
Well, this is it. This wave pretty much completes the standard Imperial Titans, leaving the door open for Xenos Titans.
That's exactly my thoughts. Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. And you know, if we saw Gargants or Phantom Titans, yep. Yeah. So that's really cool. That's not everything though. We've also got some pre-orders for Middle-earth. Now, we reported on the show a few weeks ago that profile cards were coming from Mordor, Pelennor, and the Fallen Realms. They obviously got waylaid. You know, the machinations of Sauron and Saruman possibly delayed them a little bit. They are definitely up for pre-order this Saturday. So again, as we said last time, you want to be on the Games Workshop website S10 because these sold out super, super quickly last time.
Yeah.
Hopefully they've done a bigger order, because I know pretty much the entire Middle-earth community has wanted these cards.
Yeah.
We've played games with them, Jay, and they're really handy, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
So that's all the pre-orders. But that's not all the news. It's not all the news. We've got the Black Library Celebration coming on the 29th of February. Now, this is an annual event where we tend to get some cool new figures, some cool new books, and a celebration of all things Black Library. From the 24th to the 29th of Feb, every day you will get a free book to download from the Black Library website.
And free stuff, so it's good.
Yeah, these could be novels, they could be audiobooks. This is really cool. This is kind of like the stuff they do with the advent calendar, but for free. So yeah, definitely can't knock that. 29th itself, in Warhammer and Games Workshop stores, they have got Watches of the Throne, Regent Shadow, new book by Chris Raitt, which features Valyrian and Aleia, a custody sister combo.
I really enjoyed
fighting the good fight.
Yeah, and it was a good. It's a good series. This, The Watches of the Throne. I really enjoyed the first book, so I'm looking forward to the second one.
Well, if you're a fan of the books, they've got miniatures getting released at the same time,
which we actually saw at the open day.
We did see it at the open day, yeah. And we've had some news confirming today that they are both HQ choices for their representative armies.
Yeah, so this is another special character for the Custodians, alongside Trajan Valoris. But more importantly, probably for the Sisters of Silence,
HQ choice.
You can now build a proper army with them.
That's cool.
Yep.
So yeah, now
she actually, if I remember rightly, is a match for a Bloodthirster.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Now there have been rumours of a new Custodes book coming out. I do wonder if the Sisters will get forwarded in and make it Talons of the Emperor.
Yeah. Well, I think I saw as well that there's some dice coming out.
Yes, there are Custodes dice coming out alongside these.
They did have the Custodes symbol on, not the Talon symbol. So yeah. I don't know what that means. It would be great if the Sisters were folded into the Custodian book. It would round out that book completely, because obviously they've got some big weaknesses against mortal wounds and psychic powers. Adding in some cheaper infantry that can defend against that sort of element of the game would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think that army would look fantastic on the table with the Sisters mixed in as well. Yeah. So we'll see. It's been rumoured it makes sense for if it is happening to drop around the same time as this, because essentially we've got two new characters.
So
it's pretty tasty. If you're a fan of books and novels, though, there's loads of. So I'm going to list it all here, because I think we mentioned it a few weeks ago when we first got War.
There's a few re-releases.
But loads of re-releases, loads of special edition books, loads of awesome stuff. Horus Heresy pin badges, because, you know, everyone loves a good pin badge. Yeah, looks really, really good. So a lot of this you might only be able to get in store.
I think they confirmed yesterday that it was all going to be online as well.
Okay, perfect. Well, that's good to know.
Because I did check, because I don't think they did. Last year,
I think you had to go into store to get some.
And I think there was a bit of a backlash for it. So they confirmed yesterday that it would be available.
Okay, awesome. Well, that's good to know. That's good to see those kind of changes happen for those who maybe not so lucky to live, you know, not so
close to a store.
Yeah. We had more news today, Dave. The old world we know is coming. This is going to be essentially the Horus Heresy to the Age of Sigmar, telling the tale of the old world, the fantasy world.
Mm.
A place that I know a lot of people hold very dear to their hearts. And today we saw the brand new map of the Empire, where the old world part of the old world.
Mm.
And Louise Sugden of Forgewood Studios drawn this beautiful map. It looks so good. And on the teaser, they've had a few little emblems of what look like sub-factions. So there's a Wood Elfy looking one, and a few Empire-looking ones. So I wonder if, rather than revisiting factions that they already know, we go in from a slightly different tangent and have a specific faction from that race that they can bring out new models for.
Maybe. I was very... The most important thing to take away, I wasn't expecting a teaser for this so soon, because they made it quite clear when they announced it that this is some way off.
Yeah. Now, I do wonder... Now, we put a post up earlier in the week about stuff that we might see at Adepticon. I'm now thinking maybe we will see some Old World teasers.
I don't think we will.
Concept sketches, maybe? Maybe, yeah. Maybe not.
I'll tell you what, you might have this noted down, but did you notice what else they mentioned in that article?
What's this?
New models.
Oh, we knew it was new models.
Yeah.
Originally, from the start, it's a whole new... You know, they're not going to launch a whole new game, but you can only buy the models from eBay.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see some... I mean, you know, the kits at the minute are brilliant. If we're thinking 3 years down the line, the kind of stuff they're going to do for that, it's going to be insane.
They'll be battery operated. They'll move around.
And then the last bit of news that we had dropped today, Warhammer Fest is back on the 2nd and 3rd of May. This is the annual celebration of all things Warhammer, and it is returning to the NEC.
It's gone full circle.
It's usually Coventry, is it?
Yeah, Warhammer Fest has been Coventry the last couple of years. Yeah. They've been doing it 3 or 4 years now.
Which has been a good venue for it, but it's been different levels and spread out across the place.
And I think it was very busy last year, and there was a lot of queues, and I think there's a lot of things that they've taken on board to make this, I think, the biggest Warhammer event they've ever done.
Mm. I would love to go to this one. We'll have to see about the dates, but... These are always good. I mean, we've seen some really good reveals at these.
Well, they've said that all the previews and reveals are going to be for every attendee. The benefit of being at the NEC, they can have a main stage set up with stadium seating.
Well, we saw a tiny teaser of this at the New Year Open Day, where they had the big projection screens having the reveals that everybody could see, like the Sisters of Battle release date. So everybody just falls silent for a second and looks up at the screens and sees this. And that's really cool, because that means there's not a big bum rush to try and get in a queue for a seminar to see the latest stuff.
Yeah, I presume they're going to have a main hall with all this on, and scheduled times in the calendar. It looks like it's going to be running over both days, and they're going to have different reveals over both days. So for the full experience, you probably want to buy a 2-day ticket rather than a 1-day ticket.
Yeah.
Which, maybe it's a bit cynical, but to be fair, there's enough content for 2 days.
Yeah.
Certainly, a Warhammer Fest compared to a open day.
I tell you what's bonkers, the amount of stuff they've already released this year, and we've only really had two, if you include the New Year Open Day, one major event. I mean, it's bonkers. It is bonkers. So what are they going to reveal at Warhammer Fest?
Well, I reckon we'll see the next edition of 40K.
Yeah,
I think we'll see, if they're not already out, we'll see lots of Lumineth. I think we might see some Bayomat love. I think we might see the next army for 40K as well.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Squats or something completely out there. Yeah. But I think they're going to blow our minds with these reveals.
Plastic Thunderhawk.
Plastic Thunderhawk, maybe an aeronautical one. They are still having the seminars, because they'd be more, I think, like the format of the recent open days, where it's more of a Q&A session with designers, painters.
Yeah, which isn't too bad, actually, because, like you say, they do get the designers out and the painters and the background writers, so it is quite... Like, they were informative, really. Yeah, rather than just seeing pictures of things that you can see online anyway.
And what makes this even better, due to the feedback from last year's Warhammer Fest, all these tickets you will get in advance on the website beforehand. They're free, but you can get your tickets there and then, rather than spend your first couple of hours in a queue for a seminar.
Cracking idea.
Which is really, really good. They've got exclusive models, as usual. Generally, Forge World tend to have the exclusives and early releases. Mm-hmm. Bugman's is on tour, and there will be a mini Bugman's where you can get your Bugman's brew.
Brill.
Which is, that's got sprues and brews all over it, hasn't it? Golden Demon will be there with registration on both days and the final on the Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tempted to take some miniatures this time.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think you should.
I think that'll be fun. And Warhammer Media will be there, potentially showing off Angels of Death, the new Blood Angels TV show. So yeah, it does seem like a bumper event. Now, tickets are on sale the 10th of February, which is Monday, following this recording. I imagine it's not going to start immediately, but yeah, I'd definitely think about getting tickets sooner than later.
Yeah.
For the dedicated fan, they have got a new option, the Golden Ticket, which has got, you know, kind of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory vibes going on there. But it sounds really good. You get entry to both days. You get a seat on the front row of the main stage for every showing over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
which again is really cool. And you also get a goodie bag.
Ace.
Don't know how much this is. It's not going to be cheap, I don't think.
I think they did a Golden Ticket or something similar for the last one last year.
They did,
year.
Yeah. And I think they went super quickly. Now, yeah. I think the open days at the NEC tended to be about the £30-ish pounds. Let's call it £35.
So that's £60 for 2 days.
£60 for 2 day, maybe £80 for your VIP ticket.
Yeah.
They might just go £100, here you go, super limited, yeah. but you get some goodies.
Yeah.
If we're going for the 2 days, I might give that a go because I think that'd be quite good.
Cool.
So yeah, so that is all the news.
Wow, I forgot we were still in the new segment. Excellent, so lots of stuff there to get our teeth into over the next few weeks. We're going to take a pause, let Matt regain his breath, and we'll come back with our first feature, and that is looking at the FAQs from this week. So over the past couple of weeks, me and Matt have been getting our teeth into the Disciples of Tzeentch and the Carrion Overlords following the new Battletome releases. We're big fans of both armies. Was it 2 days, 3 days ago?
Yeah, a couple of days ago.
The FAQs dropped for them because both armies had a number of question marks over them that needed clarification. In particular, the Change Host and some of the rules regarding the ships in the Overlords. These aren't massive. I mean, I've not seen the Tzeentch one, I'll be honest.
Yeah, so let's start with the Tzeentch then. So
yeah.
the first event that featured the Tzeentch book heavily was the weekend we were at the Purple Sparklies. It was also LVO. It was also the Grand Tournament at Warhammer mm-hmm. World. And there was a lot of negative play experiences from people facing Tzeentch.
Right.
Change Host is very powerful. If you don't, we'll give you the summary of it. It's essentially a one-drop army. Two units can teleport 9 inches away from the enemy. With Tzeentch, you could use the Host's Duplicitous to make a 9-inch charge and lock basically your entire opponent's army in combat with all the horrors in the world, and they're never going to be able
from
to
turn
move
one.
From turn one,
yep.
which isn't a great experience. Or if you're on the other end of the scale, you take your Conflagration army, teleport two massive blocks of Flamers, and just kill all their characters turn one with Flamers.
Mm, yeah, because you go on me first with the one drop.
Well, you go in first, yeah, and you can basically dictate where these units are going down. You know, if you take two 20-man pink horror blobs and just throw them at the entire army, that is their army tied. You know what pink horror, 10 pink horrors are like.
With Destiny Dice ensuring charges and stuff as well.
So they've reworked that. It still has the same ability, but only one unit can teleport now. It's still very good, and I imagine it might get a points increase, but it's not as kind of game over turn one as it was before.
Yeah.
They've also changed a few things that made that really, really powerful. So Destiny Dice counters are modified. So if you've got a few ones and your pink horror unit's getting a bit of a spanking, but you're popping into blue horrors and you're still tying up the unit, you then use your one off your Destiny dice and get D6 pink horrors back.
On a modified one,
yeah.
D6 back.
So you're not shifting those horrors ever. And the more horrors in the unit, the better they get at shooting, and the vicious cycle continues. So the other change they've made is that a one doesn't count as unmodified for the purposes of Battle Shock.
So you can never.
So you have to roll the dice.
Right, you don't trigger that, bring D6 units back, right?
I think that's fair.
It has to. I mean, it cannot be a fun game if you can tie up the majority of the opponent's army before that person has had a chance to do anything.
And like Matt said, in one of the covens, you can't even retreat from them.
Yeah. I mean, that just breaks the game. Not the game somewhat, but the game experience it breaks.
Well, if you see your opponent's got just wands on their Destiny Dice pool, you're not getting rid of that unit.
No.
You can dedicate all the fire, it'll split into a million blue horrors, and then you'll get some pink horrors back anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good change, and they've been very kind of like, you know, hands open, like, we've made a mistake here, we're addressing this as soon as we can, we're fixing it. Now, there is still a question mark of, you know, how was this not seen during playtesting?
Yeah, that's what baffles me, because I thought Age of Sigmar, the relationship they have with their playtesters, a lot, you know, these books are supposed to be really well tested before the
game. Maybe they rolled each players and they really wanted to teleport two units.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't fault them for fixing it within 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a pretty good fix, isn't it? You know, the other change they've made is if you are doing a charge roll, you have to replace both dice.
Yeah.
So
you can't use a six and say, I'll just roll that because I'll probably make it. Yeah. You've got to spend two Destiny dice.
Yeah.
So Destiny dice are powerful. That's just taking the edge off the extremes a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you want to do that guaranteed charge, well, you're using two dice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a good change.
That's a good trade-off.
So, yeah, it's... I think it's good that they've done it so soon. It's a shame for people at those events that it wasn't out before then.
It is, because, I mean, this is it. People pay a lot of money and spend a lot of time and effort getting ready for those events. And that is a competitive event. You know, we play Warhammer for fun, but those people play Warhammer to win. And this book comes out, 2 weeks before the event? And just throws a complete span. I mean, people may have been preparing for that event, travelled a long way to go to it, only for this book to be released and just to dominate.
I think it was CanCon happened last week. I think there was a major tournament that happened last week, and they actually did not allow you to use your new books for Zeech and Caradrons.
See, I think maybe that's...
Because the FAQ hadn't come out yet.
Yeah,
maybe because that was the plan then, that you can't, you know, at these events, they don't allow you to use the battle book, the battle tomes until the battle...
Because I'm part of a big group on Facebook for Caradron Overlords, and nobody seemed to be complaining about that fact. There were people posting a list from the old book that they'd taken to the event, and I still think actually the Overlords did okay.
Yeah, I think having even a month's grace period, because it, you know, if you're on that super competitive edge, you probably want to pick up and read that battle tome. And if it's like the week following release, your new army definitely has an edge.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. These, I don't know. I mean, a lot of them may be lifelong Zeech players, were planning on taking Zeech all along, and it was just a bonus that they got a really powerful book 2 weeks before. But I wonder how many people just were taking the chances. Oh, Zeech looks powerful, we'll take that. I don't know.
Quickly paint up a bunch of horrors.
But I mean, I just feel sorry for the people who went there and couldn't deal with that, and that's ruined their weekend for
them. Yeah. But yeah, so I think it's you know, fair play to Games Workshop for getting this out quickly.
Yeah, you can't fault that at all. It's really good news. I can't wait to enjoy my 2 weeks of awesomeness with the Luminette.
Yeah.
Jay'll be wanting to get as many games in as possible.
I'm going to cut the internet connection to Matt and Dave's house so they don't get the new FAQ that gets
released. I'm just going to very quickly go through the Caradron ones. I don't think there was anything as broken as Zeech there.
No.
But there were quite a few question marks over a few things. The main ones were involving the airships. For example, and I know this came up when we played, Matt, when you have a ship locked down in combat and it flies high, does that count as retreating for both the ship and the garrison units inside? The FAQ confirms that it does not. So when you fly high out of combat, drop back down, everything can shoot.
That's
without any problems.
That's in line with the Sylvaneth. The Sylvaneth have an ability with the next door Wildwoods at the beginning or end of the movement phase, during the movement phase, they can teleport to a different Wildwood, even if they're locked in combat, and it doesn't count as retreating. Yeah. So that allows them to shoot and charge again after.
Equally, you can run with an airship and everyone inside can shoot as well. Because they do not count as running.
And that's a massive thing. That's really good.
Yeah. Well, there's quite a few ways in the Caradron book to actually run and still be able to shoot anyway, but yeah, it's a really good bonus attached to that, you'll see the little thing now. The engine riggers and sky wardens, they can hitch a ride. So people were saying there. when you've got a bunch of engine riggers and your ironclad in combat, your ironclad flies high, can the engine riggers grab hold of that, fly high as well, and then shoot? And they can.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's fine.
That's why you've brought a load of engine riggers around for Matt to spray.
Engine riggers are really cool because they keep your ships alive and they can hitch a ride and come drop down and stuff. They're really quick. Model shooting and attacking in and out of the ships. You measure the distance from the sky vessel, so that's really cool. It's almost like a little extension on your range of your weapons, really, because you're measuring it from the vessel itself. Same goes with line of sight.
So you're cheating. Line of sight at the you're sky basically vessel. Cheating. This cheating. FAQ lets you cheat.
No, not true. maybe a handy tip for both of you guys. When you're fighting against me, if I choose to disembark from a ship while that ship is in combat, the unit disembarking must end the movement outside of 3 inches of enemy models, but within 6 inches of the sky vessel, but not wholly within, which is good.
Yeah.
So if you'd like surrounded the ship, I can't get out.
Yeah.
So yes. Another clarification was, although I think it was quite clear in the book, but it was clarified that when you're doing the deployment phase in the old book, you could say, right, I've got a unit of Arcanauts in the Ironclad, and then the Ironclad would just be one drop. So you're like getting two for the price of one. In this new book, you can't. So when you put the Ironclad down and I come to deploy the Arcanauts, I go, right, they're going to be garrisoned in the Ironclad. That's still a drop.
Got you, yep. I see. So, you don't deploy them both at the same time. No, you deploy your ships first.
A few people have said online, but what about battalions? Battalions aren't affected because you'll be putting all that stuff down at the same time anyway. So you can put an Ironclad down and go, right, the Arcanaut Company, as they're part of that battalion, are in that ship. So that's fine. Characters in garrisoned airships or terrain get -1 to hit and +1 to the save. There's a few questions about, do you also get Lookout Sir? Yes, you do. So your characters within airships are going to be -2 to hit.
Yeah.
But as you found, Matt...
In my experience, just kill the airship.
Just hit the ship. And one last point, which is a bit gamey. People were saying that based on how it was written in the Battletome, which is true, it made it sound like you could use a spell in a bottle, which is where you use an endless spell that you purchase as part of your army list in any phase.
Yeah.
I don't think it was ever meant to mean that. It's only in your hero phase so can you use that spell.
Dwarves go from being the worst wizards in the game to being the most impressive wizards in the game. Cast spells in every phase. That's Teclis's trip.
There were a few other little bits and bobs, but they were the major FAQ changes.
Sounds like another good FAQ. And
again, it's quick off the mark.
No significant rule changes,
but some like quality of life improvements there for you.
Yeah,
and clarifications.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing, isn't it? Clarifying stuff. So, So it just makes me want to play with them even more.
Yeah. I've just got images now of engine riggers firing grappling hooks up at ships that are taking off.
That's cool. Yeah. That is cool.
Firing the mate's grappling hook at a ship that's taking off and just getting pulled up with it.
Yeah.
Well, today we've also had some Middle-earth FAQs. It's been an FAQ-filled week. Mm. And again, these are fixing some potential game problems. And it's good to see these kind of things coming regularly because they could easily say, I'll just leave that until the next edition. Siege engines in Lord of the Rings, Middle-earth.
To where the world is.
If you destroy them, they become impassable terrain. Which is okay, that's theme master, you've just got a ballista sat there. However, in competitive events, people would deploy a siege engine on an objective, hoping it gets destroyed and it becomes impassable terrain, meaning your opponent cannot take that objective because they can't get close enough.
That's not on, is it?
Yeah, it's clearly not as intended, so now it just gets removed, just saying that, you know, it's not going to be in the way of any model that wants to get to an objective, so we'll just take it off the battlefield. Shades were a really powerful evil unit that reduced the dual role of enemy models within range. Now, we know it's all about the dual role in Middle-earth. Just having a flat, yet reduce your role aura was really hard. So now it affects all models, friend or foe, but it ignores the Angmar keyword. So if you're building an army around spooky ghosts and gribbly some Angmar, then brilliant. But if you're throwing in a random allied shade
For tricks,
it's going to affect your guys as well.
Yep.
So we should see a reduction of those as allied units, and it becomes stronger in an Angmar army.
Yep.
Which again is another quick fix and really, really good. Alliances have changed. So before, again, and this is combat like soup we've seen in 40k, there's a little bit of that in Middle Earth where people take the really good units from an allied army. You now need a hero of valour to lead the allied contingent, because in the lore, there would be a, you know, known character leading this army, not Bob the random...
Hobbit,
yeah. In line with that, some of the hero level keywords have changed on some characters as well. Which again is a good change, makes the armies fit the lore, which is very much a Middle-earth thing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Some really good FAQs there. I hope they keep that up with future releases. Okay, that's one feature down. We have got, actually, sticking with the Middle-earth theme, into our next segment, so we'll take a pause at this moment. So for this next part of the podcast, we're going to return to Middle-earth. Matt, you have got the new match play guide in front of you.
Now, this is something that we saw in its entirety at the Open Day a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you got to flick through it.
Yeah, so Middle-earth traditionally was very kind of like narrative-based and had scenarios, but people enjoyed the match play side and, you know, I think that's where the game got more popular, I suppose, with the kind of proper, proper match play battles and tournaments and stuff. And this book supports that way of playing in a really nice way. It could have easily been, I mean, this is essentially the General's Handbook style book.
Yeah.
But it could have just been, you know, here's the scenarios, there you go. It tries to be a guide on how to run events.
Yeah.
So it goes through all the organisation of a tournament, who you need there, a referee, a scorekeeper, a spare player, all the things to keep in mind, all the things that your gamers will need. Goes into some depth in how to do all the ranking and drawings and everything, which is really quite interesting and can easily be applied to other games. You know, when I was looking through this when we did the review over on the site, I was thinking a lot of this you can see in the unicorns and, you know, they've put on some great events.
Well, they have, yeah.
You don't kind of think about all the admin and stuff that's going on in the background.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
What I really like is that it will tell you based on how long you've got for your event, whether it's 1 day or 2 day, what each point size of game means to how many games you get to play.
Mm.
Because we've done that in the past. We go, oh yeah, we'll batter through these many games at Warhammer World, where it's like, well, actually, you might not. So from, say for example, 500 points, you'd be able to get 4 games in on a 1 day event and 7 games in on a 2 day event, with each round being an hour and a half and the board size being 4x4. To the other extreme, if you do 1,000 points, like the Throne of Skulls is, on a 1 day event you'd get 3 games, on a 2 day event you'd get 5 games, with each game being 2.5 hours and a 6x4 board. Yeah. And it's got all those in increments of the popular points levels for Lord of the Rings.
It's like, which is nice to see.
Even for us playing our own games, we can gauge how long it's going to take and how big of a playing surface you need, which is really cool.
Yep.
You also get an example result sheet and a way of generating different types of scenarios. So they've taken all of the scenarios that are in this book and put them into 6 different pools. Each pool has 1 scenario with a random game length. All the other scenarios in that pool have fixed game length. So that means the random game length games are randomised through the entire tournament.
Yeah.
So you could have every game's random game length or none of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've tried to put, you know, certain types of missions together. Because, you know, there's, say for example, for all Age of Sigmar players, there's Star Strike and I forget the other one that was very similar. You don't necessarily want to play those back to back.
No.
So you put them in 2 different pools so you have different style missions.
Yep.
Which you don't really think about, you just probably roll off randomly.
Yeah, we could use that when we go at Christmas.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we had to re-roll, didn't we?
We did have to re-roll because it was so similar, so it's a really good idea for, you know, you could play through this just for a, you know, a group of players playing a few games connected rather than a you know, a formal tournament. Yeah. It works as well. We then get the scenario, so slightly disappointed we get the original 12 reprinted. Which is a bit of a shame, but I get it if this is meant to be the complete, you know, rules pack. And it means that if they do future ones, which I imagine they probably will, they can amend those scenarios, like we've seen in 40K and Sigmar.
Chapter approved, yeah.
What is cool, though, we get some new scenarios, which is really, really cool. Now, my favourite one is Retrieval. If you're a fan of various video games, you will know this one quite well. There is a relic in each deployment zone. Your objective is to get the opponent's relic and bring it back to your own deployment zone.
Right.
While the opponent is trying to do the same thing. That's cool. Capture the flag, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks really, really fun. So essentially, if you've got to split your forces based on who's going to defend your flag, where you push people to get theirs, it seems a really fun twist. And I'm surprised we haven't seen something like this in 40k and Sigmar. So it seems like a really interesting fun, scenario. Yeah.
Who would you use, Dave?
I suppose knife to the heart is the closest you've got to capture the flag.
I guess so, yeah, but you're not then bringing it back to yours.
No, but you're still defending your flag, in inverted commas, whilst going for your opponent's.
Yeah, another interesting one is assassination. You secretly mark down who the assassin is in your army, and you secretly mark down who they're trying to assassinate. So both armies are trying to kill someone with someone in their army, but the other opponent doesn't know who's doing the killing and who's going to get killed. Mm. Which means you can do some great double bluffs.
Yeah.
And get really terrified about this, you know, 10-point hobbit that's looking menacingly at your general. So yeah, so it's a really fun new scenario. And these kind of books are always good to mix up the meta and add some new events to it. My favourite part of this book, though, is the section on doubles events. Now, we've played doubles events for other systems, they're great fun, and this basically gives you an entire rules pack on how to put together doubles events, whether in just one-off games or in a whole kind of tournament environment, which is really, really fun. Obviously, that adds a few twists into the way that armies build, so you can't have duplicated heroes across an allied force.
I'm Aragorn. No, I'm Aragorn.
Yeah. You could take a legendary legion between you, but you'd have to have different characters leading your different elements.
That would be
army.
Cool, wouldn't it? Yeah, like so Boromir and Faramir.
This is it. You could do the siege at Helm's Deep and have, say, the elf contingent and the Rohan contingent.
That's really cool, yeah.
It's a really nice way of doing it, and I think it fits better for this kind of game.
Yeah.
If you do play to those, I mean, you could easily take two random armies, but yeah, I think it works better if they are narratively tied together.
Yeah.
Each player army can't have any allies in, so you'd have to have your own force each, just to stop any shenanigans from... And we mentioned briefly in the last segment about some of the shenanigans with two kind of allied forces. When you've got two players, two allied forces, it could get a bit messy rules-wise. Yeah. So I think that's why it's leaning towards take a different army each, or take a legendary legion and take elements of that each.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. You have a primary force and a secondary force, which you can randomly determine. If, for example, you've got Aragorn leading one contingent and random hero leading another contingent, Aragorn would automatically become the primary force leader, which again makes sense, so you can't have your awesome character hiding in the secondary detachment to do shenanigans. They have written six kind of bespoke scenarios that are all about team events. In most of these, they try and split up each team.
Yeah.
So in 40k and Sigmar events that we've done, you're very much playing the normal scenario, just with two armies in each deployment zone.
Yeah.
This one will mix it up. So no escape, you've got Team A's primary force within 6 inches of Team B's primary force fighting in the centre. Behind Team B's primary force on the far flank, you've got Team A's secondary force breaking through to try and save their mates. We're on the opposite side, you've got the same for the other force.
Mm.
Again, adding a really, really cool kind of like narrative breakthrough kind of vibe to it.
Like you say, it gets away from that feeling that you're just playing a bigger game.
Yeah, this is it.
These are completely different.
There's a really cool one where you've got Team A, primary, in the very centre of the board, surrounded by the entirety of Team B. From the board edges, Team A's secondary force can come up. So basically it's a case of the primary force holding out as long as they can against the entire enemy forces, while the other half of the army is riding in to save them. Again, how cool is that?
That's really cool.
Really good.
And then the final scenario, Duel of Wits, has an interesting mechanic. It's similar to the assassination mission, where you've got to assassinate a named character. However, you can't communicate that with your teammate, leading to some frustrations, I imagine, if you're both getting pulled in different directions.
Yeah.
And they just seem really, really fun scenarios. And I think we can probably adapt these to other games.
I think so.
Yep.
I think especially Sigmar. Maybe 40k, maybe. But Age of Sigmar, I think, definitely.
Yeah. I think these are great fun to play. So rounding up this, it goes on about some events. So we've been talking about doing a kind of Age of Sigmar narrative campaign.
Yep.
we get this kind of thing in here where you get a map with different areas and different special rules for each area that you're fighting in, and a nice pretty example map. More as a toolbox for ideas rather than a full fleshed out system, but yeah, definitely enough to work on. And they suggested you could do an event where each player gets assigned a different region and you're fighting over these different regions, but then you can see kind of how the grander war's happening.
Yeah.
For a bit of, you know, for bants, as the kids say.
It's always good looking at the Middle Earth map, isn't it?
It is. They are really pretty. And finishing off the raw pack again, this is only 40-odd pages. It's £12, so it's a bargain. Probably worth it for the scenarios and stuff inside anyway. But we get some scoring systems on how you score major and minor victories, ideas for tiebreakers, and one of them is kind of inspired by the Hidden Agendas in Age of Sigmar, where you will get a range of cards where you're trying to do a certain objective. If you complete that, you get to basically break ties on the leaderboard. Again, it's another nice twist. We enjoyed playing the Hidden Agendas in Sigmar.
Yep.
It's a really good thing, and that is your lot. So, not many pages. It is only £12. I think it's handy for the scenarios. Obviously not for everyone. If you're playing your narrative games, it's probably not for you.
But it's great for taking to a tournament. You'll have your rule book with your character profiles, and then this.
With all the rules.
With all your rules and your scenarios. Yeah. So, I think that's really good. And £12, like you say, it's a bargain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really good.
So whether we see one of these every year with some updated scenarios and stuff, we've seen a lot of this kind of thing from Games Workshop, the kind of lightweight book with just the stuff that you need to play.
Yeah. What I will do is I'll put the link to Matt's written write-up about the match play guide in the podcast notes, so you can actually read all the details as well as listen back to what we've just been talking about. Excellent. That brings us to the end of another part of this podcast, but we have our top three coming up next. It is time for this week's top three, and this week's top three focused on our favourite battle boxes / stock collecting boxes / box games / gateway games, did you say?
Yeah, gateway. It's kind of all the big boxes that look impressive on the shelf.
Yeah. So I'm going to make a start this week with my third choice. My third choice is from Warhammer 40,000, and it was Battle for McCrag.
Battle for McCrag. That was a good box, wasn't
now,
it?
Now, it was a good box. For one reason in particular. Now, it pitted the Ultramarines, or Space Marines, against the Tyranids. But what really made this box special, Matt, was the scenery that came in it.
Yes.
So you got a Crash Tequila, which was amazing. We get a lot of, we're spoilt for scenery now, but back then, you didn't really get much Warhammer.
No, it was quite unusual, scenery. Really.
And not only did you get this Crash Tequila, which was in different parts, which even had a removable power pack from it as well.
Yes.
Which is really cool for objectives and such. But you also got loads of little Tyranid, like spores and stuff. And what you could now use as infestation hives for gene stealers with the stratagem they've got in their codex. That's awesome. And you got some trees and stuff as well. But I think the scenery in that box made that box.
Yeah.
It was really good value. I did mean to double check what you actually got in it. And I can't remember. Tyranids came with a bunch of Termagants, some Ripper Swarms. I can't remember what else you got. Spores.
Yeah, I mean,
I meant to do my research.
Tactical Squad.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a good mix of stuff, wasn't it?
There was. But the scenery sold that box for me.
Yeah, and the little Imperial Pilot.
Yes, he was in that box as well.
With the little canister. In fact, he was probably one of the first, non-aligned units you could take, because he didn't belong in
Imperial.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Matt, what's your third choice?
My third choice is a fairly recent one, really, and that is Dark Uprising, the new Necromunda starter set. This is, I think, what the recent re-release of Necromunda should have been.
Mm-hmm.
It has your full Zone Mortalis scenery, and it is cracking stuff.
Yeah.
I built two boxes of this now.
Yeah.
I've got a third one still to do, and it is up there with some of the best scenery they've ever done.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Definitely.
But you also get the full rules, a full scenario campaign system, which, you know, they could easily have sold as a separate kind of supplement.
Mm-hmm.
You get more than enough miniatures for two full gangs.
Yeah.
You know, you get two boxes of the Corpse Grinders and I think basically two full sets of the Enforcers as well. I think the separate Enforcers are only six to a box, so you get like 12 in there maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, really, really good box. It's a little bit pricier than some of the things on the list, but I think the dense scenery is what was needed for Necromunda, and that was what was lacking of the previous version that essentially just had card tiles, didn't it?
And let's not forget, Matt, the boxes don't come much bigger than that Dark Uprising
box. That is a big old heavy box, yeah. Equally, it is really good for storing the Zone Mortalis scenery in.
Yeah, thought about that, didn't he? Jay, what's your third choice?
My third choice is an oldie. An oldie. Back in 2005.
Ooh.
And this was, you may remember a game called Warmaster.
Warmaster? Yeah.
This isn't Warmaster, but it sort of was a bit like Warmaster. It was a battle for five armies.
The Battle of Five Armies.
This was a game, a battle, a collection in a box.
I believe it was based on the Warmaster system, wasn't
it? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it used those sort of rules. And it predates the Hobbit films and the Hobbit miniature line that you can now get from Games Workshop. I've got the image here on the screen on all the things it contained. So you had the elves in there, you had the orcs in there, you had trolls, you had dwarves, you had eagles, you had bats, you had a giant, you had Bjorn, the shapeshifter, you had Smaug, spiders of Mirkwood, you had all the dice, the markers, the rules.
It was
rules.
Very much a self-contained game, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. There was nothing else released for it or around it. It even came with some hills.
Yeah.
That you could...
the modular plastic hills, yeah.
I believe it wasn't cheap at the time, I don't think.
No, and it goes for silly money online now. I very nearly had one. When I lived in Crawley, the local Games Workshop had a competition where, you know, you got your scores tokens and there were some prizes at the end. And I managed to get first prize, which was the big apocalypse box with like 10 Lehman Russes in. And I could choose between that or the Battle of the Five Armies, and I kind of wish I'd gone for the Battle of the Five Armies.
Yeah,
but at the time it was like 10 Lehman Russes. Yeah, I'll have that.
Yeah, that's cool. Very good choice. I forgot that even existed.
Yeah.
My second choice. Do you know, it was really tempting to go for older ones, but some of the new boxes are just so good. So I am going to go with a fairly recent one for my second choice, and that is the Feast of Bones.
Ooh.
For Age of Sigmar. Now, this box is incredibly good value, but the reason it made my top three is I think it was one of the first battle boxes we've seen where it basically introduced an army. It was like, start collecting Ossiarch Bone Reapers.
It was, yeah.
I was trying to think then what the Feast of Bones... It was the Ogres and the Bone
Reapers. Yeah, so, I love the ogre half of this, and I'm going to be painting them as part of our narrative campaign for Age of Sigmar, so I'm trying to hold off painting them at the moment, but I'm really looking forward to painting that tyrant. Such an amazing model.
Yeah.
But the fact that you basically got to start collecting Bone Reapers was such a cool way to introduce a new army to Sigmar.
Yeah, you got loads of stuff. You got a character, you got some Mortec guards, some stalkers, you got some of the Morghasts as well. Yeah. So a nice selection of units. Plus all the ogre stuff,
yeah.
For value, it's one of the best ones I've done.
Yeah, and obviously you get your usual dice and 9-inch ruler and little mini book where why are these armies fighting and such. But yeah, I think that's it was a fantastic, and I hope we see it more often.
I hope we see it with the elves.
Yeah,
elves like next week, that'd be ace. That'd be really good. Luminef versus Luminef, like a grudge match.
And the way it was released as well, so you had Feast of Bones, but then, because obviously they knew that you're going to want to play with it, the battle tome came out at the same time, and then the week later they started releasing.
Which we've seen with
stuff.
Aether War as well, and Carrion Empire last year.
Yeah.
So I think they definitely are tying these into new releases. I think it was the plan with Looncurse, but obviously the Silver's been AWOL for a few months.
Yeah, they got lost in the Wildwoods, didn't they? The Silverneck book. Your second choice, Matt?
Well, my second choice is very much on the Middle-earth theme that we've had today, and it is the Battle of Pelennor Fields.
Mm.
Again, for value for money, this is, you know, unbeatable.
This
really.
It's £90, I think.
£90. You've got the full hardback rule book, which is worth like £35, and hundreds of pounds of miniatures. You've got a full Rohan army, you've got about 24 Army of the Dead, you've got more Mordor than you can ever want. Nazgul on Ring, Fel Beast.
Yeah.
Which I think that's about 30 odd quid alone.
Yeah, the new Theoden sculpt.
New Theoden, yeah. So, yeah, really, really good value box and popular armies that you can, you know, you can easily take one of those and build a force around it.
Yeah.
You could take both of those and build them into, you know, armies that you could use at a tournament, because you know the Rohan have been really, really strong recently.
Yeah,
and it's sometimes you get a starter box with some suboptimal choices because they want you to buy those other kits. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that's the case with this box.
No.
Everything in there is really good.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's
apart from the Nazgul, that's really bad.
So yeah, I think it was a genius idea, and I think Middle Earth needed it, and I think since then loads of people have gotten to the game.
Yeah agreed. Your second choice, Jay?
My second choice is a fairly recent game box set, and it is Underworld's Beastgrave. I was really impressed with Beastgrave when it was announced. For starters, it was the first starter box that didn't have the Stormcast in. Had two different factions in. It had the Beastmen, which are great models, but then more importantly it had the Knoffi, is it Skyfe's Wild Hunt, I think.
Yeah.
A brand new faction for Age of Sigmar, in the starter box for Beastgrave. I loved everything about this. The artwork on the tiles, all the extra lore, because it's set now in the realm of Gur, so we learn about the Beastgrave and these different races, and was it the Silent Whispers? Or?
Yeah, the Silent Ones, are they called?
Silent Ones, yeah. Lots of cool little snippets and teasers.
The weird thing, like the mountain itself, like sentient, isn't it?
Yeah. You got your two starter decks in there, so these are decks that are already pre-built decks you use with the two starting factions, warbands, your universal cards, all your tokens and whatnot. Fantastic, really, really good.
Can I just say, I think that is the biggest improvement with Underworlds, is when you buy the warbands now, you get a ready-made deck, yeah, ready to go.
That's, I mean, if you're playing regularly, then you build your own deck, you tweak your deck, you tune your deck, you take cards out, you put cards in. If you don't have the chance to play regularly, but you still want to enjoy a good game of Underworlds, you can just rock up with one of these pre-built decks, and you're going to have a balanced game.
Straight away with that deck, you've got how that warband works. If I take, for example, when I bought the Eyes of the Nine, I just very quickly threw a deck together. I mean, we were to play a poor tournament like a wee layer. I did terribly with them. And I think it's because I didn't really get a flavour of what worked in that. I think if I had a starter deck, I would have at least had a basis.
It teaches you the mechanics of that warband, doesn't it?
And it does,
You know, you can swap out some of the universal cards that work with those mechanics.
But you might find you might keep a third or two thirds of that pre-made deck and just change the rest, and slowly over time.
Yeah.
So I think that is the single biggest improvement for Underworlds.
For me, it's the artwork and the artistic style of it. The Mirrored City was getting a little bit tired for me by Night Vault.
Yeah.
So to have refresh it and have, we're in the realm of beasts now, and
brighter colours. Yeah. I'm the same. I find it much more visually appealing, Beastgrave, compared to Shadespire.
Yeah. Round to our top choices. So my top choice, it's for as long as I've played this game, I think it's never had a better rule set. It's the best edition of the game. And I think a key part of that was when the edition came out was the fresh starter box that it had. I am, of course, talking about 8th edition of 40K.
Ooh.
And I'm talking about Dark Imperium.
Yeah.
So it introduced the Primaris Space Marines, which are amazing models, against the new sculpts of the Death Guard.
Well, the Death Guard being their own army.
I love those Death Guard models. I like the Primaris, but I love those Death Guard models. And I think that was such a strong box. You've got a lot in there. Obviously, you've got the basic rules and stuff. I would have liked to have seen the full rules, maybe.
The full was in it. The full hardback rulebook was in
it. Oh, it was, wasn't it? I was getting confused with something else. I thought it... I mean, it's still available now to buy. I think it was a great introduction to the game. And like I say, I think the 8th edition rules are the best rules we've ever played with in 40K. It was a noticeable turning point for the hobby for me, especially for 40K.
It did sort of reinvigorate.
It did.
40K,
for me, the fact that they bundled in the full hardback rulebook was a big thumbs up, because previously you got a little paperback with kind of the core rules, but you really needed to buy the book set to get it.
Yeah.
I think that stung the Hobbit boxed game, because you couldn't really play the Hobbit outside of those forces in the box.
Yeah.
I think they saw the error of their ways and added the value of having that big chunky book in there.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that had to be my top choice. There are loads of honorable mentions, which I'll mention later on once we've done the community top threes, because quite a few of them might appear in that.
Mentions as well.
Your top choice, Matt?
My top choice, this was a hard one, but I had to go to what my first experience with a Games Workshop boxed game was. I remember waking up one Christmas morning, excitedly running down the stairs, a shared present with my brother ripping the paper off the box, and it was the Warhammer 40,000 second edition box set, the very first boxed game for Warhammer 40k.
Amazing.
This was beautiful. It had the Space Marines, represented by the Blood Angels at the time, fighting off against the Orcs with some plastic Goths and some Gretchen. To reinforce the Orcish forces, there was a cardboard Orc dreadnought in there, and punch out cardboard ruins.
Very cool.
Plus all your dice, and I believe they came with glue at the time as well to stick your models together.
I think I remember those cardboard ruins.
And yeah, it was such a good box. The rule books were split into a book with lore, a book with points and army lists, and a book with the rules, which was kind of reimagined in the previous edition of 40k, where they had that three distinct books in a slipcase. And loads of the lore that's being revisited now is in the pages. I remember paging through and seeing the classic non-metallic metal Dante. And the
that's how old that model is.
That is how old that model is. And the Gene Stealers with red claws, the High Fleet Behemoth, are they? Yeah, so good, and so many memories from this. Now, mine's been lost to the sands of time. If I did see it in a charity shop, I'd probably pick it up just for those books.
What I want to know, Matt, is which half was whose?
My brother had the Blood Angels, and I had the Orcs.
The Orcs, cool. Good choice. Yeah. Good choice.
I used to like, back in that day, the old pencil-like illustrations.
Sketches.
The sketches. Such a cool feel to 40k back then. I mean, even now they are. Now it's fantastic, but there was something about those old black and white pictures.
And that, and you could buy this in Argos as well, which I think suddenly made it a lot more accessible to people who, because Games Workshop were everywhere now, but it wasn't always the case.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's gone full circle again, hasn't it? Because you can buy Dark Imperium from Argos if you really wanted to. Your top choice, Jay?
My top choice, and very fitting considering the general mood I'm in at the moment with regards to the hobby. This was a box set which I believe was 2010. I'm thinking, was it 2000? No, maybe it wasn't 2010. It was,
if it's the one I think it is, they re-released it as well, didn't they?
Did they? Right. So it was for 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy, and it was the Isle of Blood.
This was an honourable mention for me.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. Which pit the High Elves versus the Skaven. And what was great about this box was the content, how many models you got, and the quality of the model you got.
They were absolutely fantastic kits.
Yeah, so I mean, if we look at the Skaven side first, so traditionally the Skaven army, at the time, your weapons teams were all metal models, blisters. This box included two of the weapons teams in plastics for the first time. I don't think they ever redid these models. No. These are still the weapons teams you buy today.
Yeah. So this box was re-released in the Age of Sigmar era as Spire of something.
That's right, yeah.
And yeah, that was briefly the only place you could get them. After that, these have been lost to time, unfortunately.
Yeah, if you want weapons seen for Skaven, you're buying fine cast on metal.
Right.
These were the only plastic ones they ever did. And also the only plastic Warlock engineer.
Yes.
Aside from the new one from Carrion Empire.
Yeah.
And absolutely brilliant Rat Ogres.
The
best Rat Ogres I've done.
Yeah. With the handler. With his little tripod, like Igor type thing, you also got a bunch of Clan Rats and a Warlord, a Skaven Warlord, which was a mint model, standing on top of some Elven ruins with a big
Claw
cleaver.
Lord,
and then on the High Elf side, well, I mean, you could always take Lothin and Seaguard in the High Elves, but ever since I remember collecting High Elves, Lothin and Seaguard were in there, but you could never buy Lothin Seaguard. I think if I remember rightly, there was a little bow and quiver you could attach to a spear elf.
There was. Now those spear elves were like two editions predating this as well.
Yeah.
The difference in sculpting and quality. This is obviously just on the cusp of the digital sculpting age where everything just became a lot cooler.
Yeah.
Compared to those old chunky spear elves with the big meaty hands.
Yeah. Yeah, so these Lothin Seaguard were ace with the motif on the shield, and also they had little bits of like seaweed and things on the banners.
All drifting in the same direction, remember rightly, so it looked kind of impressive as a unit.
Yeah. Elrian Reavers, I remember having some Elrian Reavers, and these were metal and plastic hybrid kits with the old Elven Steeds. I love these Elrian Reaver models, and I really wish you could use them in games today because they're so cool. One of the big appeals of the box was the plastic Swordmasters. Now these were really, really nice looking models, and they still stand the test of time today. These don't look out of place in an Age of Sigmar army today. I used to have, I think, about 20 or 25 of the old metal ones. These plastic ones were leagues ahead of those. And this was the only place you could get them as well. You couldn't buy them outside of this box.
No.
Swordmasters are no longer in the game currently. But we will see whether they reappear in some form. You also got a mage. And this was one of the impressive things about High Elf mages back in the day. They weren't, I think there was one High Elf mage and Teclis as well, who were just on foot, that looked like regular elves on foot. All the other High Elf mage were like floating on rocks, floating on fire, floating on puffs of
water.
They
were really dynamic, weren't they?
Yeah, so this guy's sort of like a big swirl of magical energy underneath him, and he's hovering above it with his staff.
I only found that model about a week and a half ago.
Yeah,
I still have him.
I've got one kicking around somewhere. I think it was when the Teclis post was on LVO. I thought, that's a sign, isn't it?
It's really cool. And then finally, an Elfarian. Was he Elfarian? I don't know if he was.
No,
Elfarian.
He was just a High Elf Lord.
No, but he could pass as an Elfarian on a Griffin. Really, really nice model. The actual mount itself is very, very well detailed, and then the High Elf noble on top with his lance, really, really cool. And again, I mean, these models wouldn't look out of place on the battlefield in Age of Sigmar 2nd edition. They used to have some war scrolls and battalions.
They did, yeah. Now I imagine a lot of this will get reinvented with the Lumineth Realm Lords.
Yeah.
But the Skaven, I'm surprised they didn't. You know, we had a made to order recently of the Dark Vengeance box with the Dark Angels. They need to sell these Skaven kits. It's a Dark Collecting box. It'd be so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Brilliant. Some very, very good top threes there. But we've got some even better top threes from you guys, so bear with us. It is time for the community top threes, and my golly gosh, we've got a lot of them. We're going to start over on Facebook. Our local Warhammer store manager, Dan, has posted a comment. He has said, I'm going to have to be that kind of fanboy, I'm afraid. Dark Imperium. Despite seeing that box so often, it still contains some of my favourite Marine sculpts. In brackets, the lieutenants in that set are brilliant, and the Death Guard have got to be some of the most characterful baddies in a starter set ever.
Is it controversial to say I prefer the Marines in that box to the multi-part Marines you can
buy? I think that's very controversial.
Yeah, I do.
Very controversial.
Mmm.
Craig Brereton says, the new versions both of Space Hulk and Necromunda, both of which take what was great about the originals in terms of both gameplay and miniature quality, and improve upon it and show what could be done with the greatest of them all, Manowar.
Manowar.
Daz Brain says, Carrion Empire was my favourite, Feast of Bones a close second, and then I'd say Shadowspear, which was a very good box.
Shadowspear was a good box.
David Metcalf says, I'm going Advanced Hero Quest, as this was the first box set. Warhammer 4th Edition, again, more of a personal favourite. And finally, Dark Imperium or Shadowspear, the quality of the monopose miniatures is amazing.
Yeah.
Ian Redfern says, Feast of Bones, followed by Carrion Empire, are up there. But if you included the core games, my top two would be Soul Wars, an honourable mention of mine, and then Warcry, with a shout out to Necromunda Dark Uprising.
Mm.
Warcry, all that scenery.
Yeah, it's a good box.
Finally on Facebook, Sean Gleason says, I'm going to say Manowar, Necromunda, and Adeptus Titanicus. I'm imagining he means the Warlord, the Grandmaster Edition.
Yeah.
Over on Facebook.
Cool, well, HPL says Hero Quest, Warhammer Quest, and Soul Wars.
Yeah, very good choices.
Mr. Vincent Notley says the Titanicus Grandmaster Edition, Wings of Vengeance, the Aeronautica box, and Dark Uprising for the terrain.
Mm.
He also throws in a cheeky fourth with the Pelennor Fields box.
Yeah.
Sombermime, the Warhammer Battle 4th Edition. Not only it started my journey into Warhammer, the box art was superb. Now, this was great. This was the same kind of era as the 2nd Edition 40k box, and you had elves, I want to say, against goblins with a plastic lord on Griffin. A bit of a throwback to your, your plastic one. The 1st Edition Age of Sigmar box. The first time we saw those Stormcast.
And the Blood...
Bloodbound.
Bloodbound,
yeah. And Dark Imperium. Primaris Marines are so wonderful sculpts. Fabius Fulgrim, Battlefleet Gothic. Now, that was a good boxed game.
Why did I forget about Battlefleet Gothic?
Number two, Mordheim, with the really customisable kits to change your loadouts of your guys. And Gorka Morka, which, you know, came with a big cardboard orc fortress, which was ace. Pete Allison, they're sticking with the boxed games. Warhammer Quest, the original one, which, you know, some of the models look a bit dated now, but it was a brilliant game. Necromunda, all of them. And Bombers Over the Sulphur River.
You only mentioned that a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And he has an honourable mention to a second edition Warhammer 40k. Nick Baton says there's always a special place in his heart for Battle of Skull Pass. Now, this is one of my honourable mentions. He painted 400 goblins from that set for an army. Now, this came with a baggage train as well.
Came with a baggage train. And didn't it come up with a tied up troll slayer?
Tied up troll slayer, a little pony.
And a little
wigwam thing.
Wigwam, yeah.
Yeah, that was an awesome
I only
box.
Found that dwarf pony the other day as well.
Martin Morin says the Warhammer Fantasy Battle 3rd Edition box and the Warhammer 40,000 2nd Edition were amazing in their day. They changed everything and had a massive influence on his life. Final has to be Dark Imperium, had the best bits from all previous sets in there.
Yeah.
The Rising Ape, Battle for McCrag, because it was the start to their hobby. Hero Quest, because it was my start in the hobby. And Necromunda, because who didn't love that card terrain? As much as I love the card terrain, I do think the plastic stuff out of Dark Uprising one-ups it. But yeah, for the time, that was awesome. And you could fill out a board with that stuff. Mike Lode's Minis, Dark Vengeance for all the terrain. Blackstone Fortress, I think it means Dark Uprising, maybe. Blackstone Fortress very quickly became his favourite game of all time. And Warhammer Fantasy Battle 6th Edition, Empire versus Orcs and Goblins. Not my first, but certainly best memories.
I think I remember the artwork for that box. It was really, really cool.
I think it came with a chariot for the Orc side. And I think these were... Traditionally, these kind of boxes have those mono-pose sprues. I think this one had the individual kits in.
Yeah, I remember the Empire Knights, I think, being in that one.
Richard Brazier, Shadow Spear, amazing refresh of the Chaos Minis with loads of gubbins. Epic Titan Legions for the Imperator Titan. That was cool. And, two Mega Gargants, Knights, Battle Wagon Scenery, one of the best war games he's ever played. And then Dark Imperium, because 8th edition and all that followed. Lots of love for 8th edition. Yeah. Rob Hawkins, Dreadfleet. Completely standalone with everything you need to play the game. A cloth mat, all of the ships. And the nicest little ship models ever made by anyone ever. Even this island scenery was great. You know what? I've painted up a Dreadfleet box and never played it. We should do that one.
We've
day.
Had a couple of games. We played them at the Games Day.
Yeah, we did.
And I played the little dwarf ironclad with the little...
flying helicopter, little gyrocopter.
Yeah, that was cool. Rob Hawkins says Island of Blood had unique sculpts and some of the nicest starter set models ever produced. And honestly, some of the best Skaven and High Elf models they've ever done. And it also had a mini rule book with the full rules. Which again was really handy, and something we've seen return these days. Mm. Triple D, 40k 2nd edition, nostalgia. Necromunda 1st edition, card buildings were a game changer. And Shadow Spear, so many gorgeous brand new kits. Patrick O'Leary, Dark Vengeance for 40k. Island of Blood for fantasy. And Blood Bowl 2016. That was a really good box. I would probably do a refresh on that, aren't we?
Well, I mean, we've just seen the Goliaths getting an upcoming refresh of Necromunda. Maybe they'll do the same for the humans and orcs in Blood Bowl.
Yeah, because the new kits just blow those out.
They do have some nice resin upgrades on the Forge World.
Yeah. John Power Jr., Soul Wars. Going back into the hobby after decades out, beautiful sculpts and the core box a work of art. This very nearly made my list. Controversially, it didn't, because there are some illegal unit sizes in there.
Like the free stalkers and stuff.
Which is fine for playing the game. I think it would have been nice to have them being able to be used in full games more easily.
Yeah.
You got the free evocators, didn't you, I think, in the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a really nice book, and the models are brilliant. And again, full hardback, full book. Mm. Blackstone Fortress made 40k interesting as a lived-in space and we all play it. And Dark Future. So this was a game with tiny little cars in a Mad Max-style universe.
Yeah, didn't they recently release a computer game?
There was, yeah. There's a review of it and a video, I believe, over on the website. Mousebait says, Isle of Blood, Betrayal at Kalth, and Assault on Black Reach. Now, Betrayal of Kalth is an awesome box. It was pretty much Dark Collecting Horus Heresy.
Yeah. And it was, wasn't it? But it also had like a separate game system
board game
inside it.
As well, yeah. The All Points, Jamie, it says Advanced Hero Quest, Space Marine, and Advanced Space Crusade. Ex Profundis says Epic 40K. The game had mixed reviews, but the box contents were so great. So this was the new edition of Epic, and it wasn't as popular as some of the previous editions. They changed the base size from square to rectangle. You could still use your old square bases, but I think there was a bit of kickback on that. We've not seen that since, have we? And it had an entire Imperial Fists army, an entire Orc army, a cardboard Orc Gargant, because it was the season of that kind of thing, and then loads of plastic ruins at like 10mm scale, which is really cool. Battle of Skull Pass, a dizzying array of models, really characterful extras too, 40k second edition, fun models and books, also cardboard dreadnoughts, and Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. Yeah, so this had the classic elves and the classic men.
Battle of
plus the goblins, yeah.
Oh, the Numenoreans, yeah.
These are really dated models now, but this was the original starter box for Lord of the Rings, and again, came with a full rulebook. Liam Jordan, the Mordheim starter box, two full warbands, best part of a table's worth of scenery, and made about 20 years ago. So far ahead of its time, you can see this formula being revisited in recent sets now.
Mm-hmm.
I would love them to redo Mordheim with the kind of plastic scenery we've seen in Dark Uprising.
Do you fear that because of Warcry, we're less likely to see that?
No, because it's a different game. It's more of a role-playing game.
Yeah, it's more narrative than Warcry's
game. Yeah.
And again, I think it'd fly off the shelves.
Yeah.
I imagine they're probably waiting for the Old World to come out and then drop this and make all of the money.
All of
the money. Chris says, Warhammer Quest, the original one. He didn't own it, but his brother Runebrush did. Space Hulk, any edition. And Age of Sigmar Soul Wars, the quality of push-fit minis is unreal. You see, push-fit minis used to be a byword for poor quality minis, where that's definitely not the case now. Like no. Jay says, some of the push-fit stuff is better than the multi-part kits.
Yeah, I prefer the primary intercessors.
A lot of my Stonecast that are painted are the ones from Soul Wars.
I mean, look at the Underworld stuff. Fantastic models in there that are all push fit, and then you compare that to what was the Battle for McCrag?
Battle for McCrag,
with the Space Marines on there. Awful.
Yeah, so Battle for Skull Pass, Gabor both says, and Isle of Blood are iconic. They did a great job on selling not just a bunch of miniatures, but the setting. The Warcry corset did a similar job, which, again, that missed my list, but that had amazing scenery, amazing kind of background, brilliant miniatures. Crisper Walker Buckton says Shadow Wars Armageddon, chock full of the first truly modular scenery. So the Sector Mechanicus stuff,
and really you got some old school scouts.
You did,
and orcs, wasn't it?
I think it was orcs and scouts, was it, something like that? Shade Spire, unlike anything we'd seen before, and second edition 40k paper orc dreadnought. Enough said. Big Ginger Steve, second edition 40k Existential Dreadnought, I love that name. Got to go with Dark Imperium for getting me hooked on 40k, the original Space Hulk for being one of the best rule sets, and second edition Blood Bowl, because who doesn't love a fake Astro Granite pitch? The game wasn't bad either. So it's we've had an absolute load of shout-outs from here all night reading them all out, but that's been a selection of our favourite ones.
My days, that's probably our biggest reply to a top three ever. Thank you so much for sending yours in. If we did miss yours, our apologies. It's just been really popular this week, but have no fear, because you've got another shot of it next week. Because what is next week's top three, Matt?
So with the announcement of Warhammer Fest coming back, we want to know your top three Warhammer events. So whether they be a specific game day that you've been to, or even an event or tournament that you've attended, your best three Games Workshop events that they've put on.
I'd like to throw in there as well any store events.
Oh yeah,
maybe you've been to a particular fancy, maybe a new store opening or something like that,
or a game store launch. Tournament.
Yeah, let us know. All the social media links are given at the end of the podcast. Please send yours in. Hopefully, you'll get it read out on next week's show. That's been quite an epic podcast this week, folks.
Yeah, it's been a bumper show for what was a 40-page book review that we were like, we will fill the episode today.
Definitely. So thank you very much again for your ongoing support, and we'll be back in your ears next week.
See you later.
See you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruceandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruceandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruceandbrews.